Coming up on KUCB News, unrest at Chulalongkorn volcano continues, and Alaskans are among U.S. firefighters helping Australia during the country's worst ever wildfire season. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Hope McKenney with some local news on Tuesday, January 7th, 2020. The Unalaska Raiders won the girls' championship game at the Rally the Region's Hardwood Classic on Saturday in 4 minutes of overtime. Carl Pulliam was calling the games during KUCB's live broadcasts during the four-day championship in Anchorage.
And outside to Villamar, winding the clock down, 13 seconds on the clock. Villamar with it, guarded by Fisher, dribbling out the clock, 7 seconds. The Unalaska Lady Raiders will have the championship here.
Unalaska trailed behind Unicleet for most of the game until Kayla Villamore hit two free throws with 25 seconds left to give her team the first lead of the game. In the end, the Raiders beat Unicleet 54-43. Riley Spetz, head girls basketball coach for the Raiders, says going into the final day of the tournament, it came down to a tiebreaker for who was going to go to the final game. Villamore and Haley Wilson were chosen to participate in a shootout and got the team into the championship.
We faced Unicleet in the championship, which is a common opponent, somebody we play a couple times every year, usually at regions. And we had a tough game, didn't play very well most of the game, and then kind of turned it on at a certain point and ended up winning in overtime.
Villamore was the high scorer for Unalaska with 21 points during the game, including 6 in a row in overtime. Wilson, the tournament's individual scoring runner-up, finished with 14, and Alexis Magalong added 13.
We have some great senior leadership, a lot of returning girls who have played at state 2 years in a row now, and so it's more about me just learning, you know, how they like to be coached and what they need. As far as encouragement goes, and I'm just trying to be supportive as much as I can, but they're playing really hard, and I think we got a good start to the season so far.
The team was 3-1 over the weekend.
Oh, it's been a lot of fun, folks. 4 days of great basketball here at Diamond High School, throwing some games over there at ACS, and I've seen a bunch of good basketball by our rural Alaskan schools, but can't say enough about the Unalaska Raiders and their opponents tonight, Unicleet, two great communities out in Western Alaska and Northwest Alaska. We'll see them again in March, too, at the region.
The Raiders boys didn't make the championship game and finished the tournament with a 1-3 record. They lost to Unicleet 77-70 on Saturday. Ash eruption at Chulalongkorn volcano continues and has intensified as shown in satellite and lightning data. The aviation color code has increased to red and alert level has increased to warning. Hans Schwager, a geophysicist with the Alaska Volcano Observatory, says the volcano, 58 miles southwest of Cold Bay, began erupting again this morning and had sent an ash cloud of 27,000 feet that is drifting to the east-northeast as of 1 p.m. this afternoon.
At about 5 this morning, Alaska time, there was an increase in the seismicity at Chulalongkorn. Seismicity then dropped a bit, but has been ramping up recently. And since then, the high-level meteorological clouds have moved to the northeast, and we can now see that there is, in fact, a volcanic cloud that has been continuous, likely since that event this morning.
The AVO alerted the aviation community about the potential hazard of volcanic ash in the atmosphere. There has been no impact on aviation thus far, but the National Weather Service issued a SIGMET warning. Schwager says there is some ash fallout potential near the volcano.
There's possibly a little bit of trace ash that might fall in the coastal area to the north of the volcano, so it's National Weather Service Forecast Office is putting out a marine advisory for that area. But it doesn't look like at this point that any communities will be impacted by the fallout. You know, the eruption is ongoing, and so it could change if the weather or the winds change direction.
The AVO said there are trace amounts of ashfall in Cold Bay. The volcano had a low-level eruption last week, producing an ash cloud approximately 24,000 feet, accompanied by volcanic lightning. The observatory is monitoring the volcano closely, and while there are no indications of a major eruption, Chasholdin is a volcano with an ability to ramp up quickly. It has had at least 54 episodes of unrest, including over 24 confirmed eruptions since 1775.
Chasholdin has been one of the volcanoes that has been active over the last many decades. And in the late 90s, there was an eruption that sent a plume quite high, and then it was more quiescent for a while. But then every few years, it seems like it's becoming a bit active. And so we're in the middle of an eruptive sequence right now, and so it will likely continue for a bit, and we don't know quite how long, but this isn't anything out of its normal behavior.
Chasholdin is monitored by local seismic and infrasound sensors, satellite data, a web camera, a telemeter geodetic network, and distant infrasound and lightning networks. The AVO says it is possible for the current activity to intensify or decrease with little warning. Alaskans are among U.S. firefighters helping Australia during the country's worst ever wildfire season. According to a Department of Interior release, just under 100 Interior and Forest Service firefighters from around the country have been helping Australia over the last month. And while some have rotated back after 30-day assignments, others are heading to Australia, where blazes have charred more than 12 million acres and killed at least 25 people. Alaska Division of Forestry spokesperson Tim Mowry says the state does not have a cooperative agreement with Australia, but a few Alaska-based federal firefighters are among those who have gone south.
A plan section chief, there was also a fire behavior analyst from the Fish and Wildlife Service that went over, and a couple more operational folks.
Mowry says a state contract pilot is also working in Australia.
To fly lead planes for air attack.
Australia leans heavily on aerial suppression, says Mowry.
And I think a lot of it is they're just a big focus is telling people that they have to leave their homes, they have to evacuate because these fires move really quickly.
Mowry says many of Australia's ground-based firefighters are volunteers, and that compared to responses in the U.S., a relatively low number of crews are deployed. Washington State's first Native American Supreme Court justice was sworn in this week in Olympia, Washington. Northwest News Network's Austin Jenkins reports.
Native American drumming and singing preceded the swearing-in ceremony. Justice Raquel Montoya Lewis becomes the first Native American to serve on the state's high court. After she took her oath and donned the black robe, she spoke of feeling like the Washington Supreme Court wasn't built with people like her in mind.
Taking a seat at this particular bench feels like a tectonic shift, and one I knew I could do only if I did it the only way I know how, with my community here with me in person and in spirit.
Also being sworn in as the 57th Chief Justice was Deborah Stevens, who called it the greatest privilege she could imagine. She closed her remarks by reading a poem about building community and understanding each other. I'm Austin Jenkins in Olympia.
The city of Sitka has gone on record opposing a proposed federal rule that would create special protections for humpback whales in southeast waters, even though most of the whales that feed in the region are not listed as endangered or threatened. The public comment period on the rule has been extended to the end of January. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
4 years ago, humpback whales were taken off the endangered species list, but that doesn't mean that all whale populations are healthy. Instead, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration split humpbacks into 14 distinct population groups, 9 of which need no further protection, 4 of which remain endangered, and 1 of which, a population which breeds off the coast of Mexico, remains listed as threatened. Some of that Mexico breeding population of humpbacks feeds in southeast Alaska in summertime, which is why NOAA now proposes designating much of the area as critical habitat. Local officials in Sitka are concerned that a critical habitat designation will be another hurdle in the permitting process for work on the city's waterfront and become an impediment to the management of the region's commercial fisheries. This is Interim Municipal Administrator Hugh Bevan speaking to the Sitka Assembly in November.
Somewhat of a misconception that things like this only apply to federal actions, but they also apply to any permits that we are required to obtain from the federal government. And I'm especially concerned about impacts to our abilities to maintain our harbor infrastructures and things like that.
Bevan provided the assembly with a letter he had submitted on November 7th to NOAA objecting to the proposed rule because of the regulation of vessel traffic, high administrative costs, and the regulatory burden Sitka already bears under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. Bevan concludes by stating, "There is no clear presentation in the proposed rule that the subspecies of humpback whales that visit our waters are indeed in danger of extinction." Sitka-based whale biologist Jan Straley is one of the dozens of researchers whose work is cited by NOAA in the proposed rule. In this case, the city administrator is correct. Most of the humpback whales that feed in Southeast in summertime don't go to Mexico to breed.
About 95% of them go to Hawaii.
The Hawaii breeding population is not one of the subpopulations of concern in the proposed critical habitat rule. Straley says the proposed rule is working off the best available data for humpback whales, most of it more than 10 years old. There's not a lot of funding for these studies, she says, and the latest work suggests that the whale populations are moving around more as food becomes more scarce on their traditional feeding grounds.
Multiple feeding aggregations go to these breeding areas in the winter. So Hawaii has whales from Southeast and Prince William Sound and further west. And Mexico mostly has whales from Prince William Sound further west. Southeast whales do not go to Mexico in very high numbers.
Straley plans to forward this information to NOAA during the comment period. She hopes the agency will focus more attention on long-term monitoring of humpbacks whose populations dipped during the recent period of ocean warming. NOAA's Lisa Manning is the Endangered Species Act National Listing Coordinator. She told Coast Alaska Public Radio Station KFSK that coastal communities did not have to be alarmed by the proposed rule.
Critical habitat really affects federal actions. It's not something that affects everything that takes place within those areas that everyone's seeing on the map. The regulatory effect of critical habitat is it requires federal action agencies to make sure their actions don't adversely affect or destroy the critical habitat.
NOAA also states that the costs associated with the rule are expected to be small and largely associated with the administrative costs borne by federal agencies. The tab in Southeast Alaska to designate critical habitat for the subpopulation of the Mexico breeding whales is estimated to be between $64,000 and $75,000 a year. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Hope McKenney, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts. ¶¶